morning and welcome to a special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My special guest in the studio for all 3 hours of the morning show today will be retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. In today's show, we've got a great lineup for you. In the first hour, we're going to talk to Secretary of State Mark Ritchie. During the second hour, we've got the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. And later on in the show, in the third hour, we will have the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelotow, on, and the Governor and Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard, Mark Dayton. But before we get started on this special Memorial Day show, we thought it would be best to hear from one of the Minnesota National Guard's chaplains. So here he is, Chaplain Captain Vince Hokanen, with some thoughts on Memorial Day.
Well, the passage that I wanted to read to you today on this Memorial Day is Proverbs 27, verse 12. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. And as our soldiers are preparing for battle, even in today's conflict, they prepare at length for mobilization, and they go to their training and prepare to engage the enemy that they're going to be facing in the operations. And any prudent person would want to prepare for any kind of battle. We often prepare our finances for our houses, and we borrow money for our cars, and we want to foresee those things that we might be facing in the future. And our country has always been the kind of country that foresees things, and our soldiers have always prepared for battle. And today we want to honor and memorialize those that have given their lives, who've prepared our nation for the prosperity that we see and that we experience today. And we want to honor those that have given their lives and the families that have sacrificed so much for the course of freedom and fighting for our justice. And we thank God for these things that he's given to us. And I wanted to offer a prayer on this Memorial Day. Heavenly Father, as we consider this Memorial Day, we want to recognize those soldiers and families that have gone before us and have given their lives in defense of our great nation. We honor their memory and sacrifice and thank you for their dedication and commitment to all Americans. We ask for strength for each day those who are serving abroad and for their families to help them endure the rigors of separation. Help us who are in the military here back home to do all we can to support our military families. We think of the millions of veterans out there who have fought in past wars and who have served their country faithfully and ask you to bless them with health and prosper their futures. Help all of us to never forget the sacrifices our fighting men and women have paid on our behalf. Help us sense your presence each and every day as we continue to enjoy the freedoms our veterans have bought for us with their sacrifices and even their lives. God bless America. In your name I pray.
Thank you, Chaplain Hokanen. General, I want to make sure the audience gets a little bit of background. This is retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly, recently Director of the Joint Staff, the Minnesota National Guard, and he's graciously agreed to join me as co-host for 3 hours of the show this morning. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Tom, and thank you for the opportunity to come in and spend some time with you today. Memorial Day is a very special day for me, particularly after serving 30 years in the Army National Guard in the Army and doing a tour in Iraq. This day is a very special day, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
General, can you give us a little debriefing on Memorial Day, where it came from, what it really means to us?
Certainly, Tom. Memorial Day was first observed a couple years after the Civil War ended. So I think the first Memorial Day was the 30th of May, 1868, and originally it was known as Decoration Day, a day set aside to honor the Civil War dead by decorating their graves with flowers, flags, and so forth. The original date, as I said, was the 30th of May, so today we're celebrating Memorial Day on its historic date. And it was selected specifically because it wasn't the anniversary of a historic battle through the history of the Civil War. The 30th of May was a day that was calm and quiet. Originated by the Grand Army of the Republic, which was an organization of veterans, soldiers, and sailors from the Civil War. And I think it's interesting when you read the general order that established and declared the first Decoration Day or Memorial Day. And this is what it said from General Logan. The 30th of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion and whose bodies now lay in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land. In this observance, no form of ceremony is prescribed, posts and comrades will fill their own way and arrange such fitting services and testimonials of respect as circumstances permit. Throughout the 1800s, Memorial Day was recognized and observed on the 30th, and then with the Spanish-American War and World War I, it transformed to become a day to remember all of those who had fallen in America's wars throughout our history.
General, I've got a copy of that. That was headquarters of the Grand Army of the Republic, General Order Number 11, May 5th, 1868. General, seems to be some discussion. There's a lot of folks that want Memorial Day moved back to May 30th all the time instead of just a three-day weekend. But we celebrate it as a three-day weekend, but we should remember what it's really about, shouldn't we?
Well, I agree that we should remember what it's really about. And there is, like a lot of holidays, there's always a discussion about whether it should be on the traditional day or on the officially established day. Back in 1971, Congress declared that Memorial Day was going to be a national holiday, and it would be spent on the last Monday of May. One of the things I think it's important to remember about Memorial Day is that it's not intended to be a day of national mourning for those who have passed. There's a great quote out there that says words along the lines of, "Don't cry for them unless you knew them. Honor their service and their ultimate sacrifice. Remember them." So for those families who have lost loved ones in America's wars, we know today will be a hard and emotional day. For the rest of us, we need to have it be a day of respect and honor, remembering those Americans who gave their all for this country.
And later on today, sir, at 3 o'clock?
And later on today at 3 o'clock, it's encouraged, if you will, that there be a moment of silence at 3 o'clock that all Americans, in whatever way they feel is appropriate, take a moment to pause and reflect and think about and in their own way honor those Americans who have paid the ultimate price to give us the great country that we have today.
Thank you, General. That's General Joe Kelly. He'll be with us all morning on this special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. For those that are listening, there are some departure ceremonies today, Monday, May 30th, in Mankato at noon, Laverne at 1 o'clock, Rochester at 4, and Pipestone at 4:30. These are departure ceremonies for the 1st Brigade Combat Team on the way to Fort McCoy and then on the way to Iraq. We have to take a short break, and we'll be back with Secretary of State Ritchie. This is a special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're usually heard here Sunday mornings on News Talk 100.3 FM at 7 a.m. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and today my special guest host for the 3 hours this morning is retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. We're fortunate to have in studio today Minnesota's Secretary of State Mark Ritchie. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Mr. Secretary, I understand you're going to have a real busy day today.
That's right. I make it a real objective of mine to make sure that I'm out in greater Minnesota. I think we have a lot of incredible events here in the metropolitan area, but there's amazing remembrances and different ceremonies throughout the state, and I'll go from here directly up to St. Cloud to the special. We have our Veterans Hospital in St. Cloud. It's one of the most important in our region, but their whole Metropolitan Veterans Organization there does a fantastic job, and the day will unfold from there, and I'll end up late in the day back in the Twin Cities for a ceremony out at the Veterans Home, and if I can squeeze in four or five more, we'll make it happen today. But I do think, as General Kelly said, it's a very special day for not just the families, but for all Americans, and it's a real opportunity for remembrance, but also making sure we turn that remembrance into action.
And Mr. Secretary, that event at St. Cloud will be at 10:30 this morning at the St. Cloud VA Health System in St. Cloud?
That's correct.
And then later this afternoon at 2 o'clock, you'll be at the Minneapolis Veterans Home out near the VA Hospital.
That's correct. And there'll be an event prior to that at Canterbury. Some of the VFW organizations are putting that together. Also, way up north, there's a very special ceremony today at the Bois Fort at the Indian tribe there that's doing a special opening of their new memorial for Native American veterans. And that's been an important part of our military force in the United States, and they're doing a very special ceremony to open a new statue and tribute there that's there on the reservation.
And then, of course, here in the Twin Cities at 10 o'clock today out at Fort Snelling National Cemetery, Governor Mark Dayton will be out there, and that's the big one in town, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the big ones. I think almost as large as the 10:30 event at Lakewood Cemetery, which Lakewood Cemetery is a very special place because it was created by Civil War veterans who were part of the leadership of our community here, and that's that location also has our special cemetery for Grand Army of the Republic members. I think it was very important in the opening invocation. It was shared that people are often thinking about things that might happen and being prepared. The Grand Army of the Republic was a very special organization because those veterans of the Union Army were aware that as a nation, sometimes we were too often forgetting, especially the sacrifice of our Revolutionary War soldiers and our soldiers from the War of 1812. And so the leadership of the Grand Army of the Republic, when they created that organization, really were wanting to make sure that as a nation, we'd never forgot the sacrifice. And when they ultimately gathered up all the small local ceremonies into the national, what they called Decoration Day, now we call Memorial Day, it again was in that thought process of making sure that as a nation, we never forgot the sacrifice and what was accomplished. And so that big event at Lakewood Cemetery has a special place because of its historic connection to those Civil War veterans. And, of course, this is the 150th anniversary year of the start of the Civil War. So there's some special events being planned there for today.
Mr. Secretary, we're going to have you back on the show in a couple of weeks for half of a show and talk about the Civil War. It's the 150th anniversary. But I thought it was interesting. A week ago yesterday, the 1st Brigade Combat Team out at historic Fort Snelling had a departure ceremony. And 150 years ago, we sent 1,000 members of the 1st Minnesota off to Civil War, and they transferred the flag to the 1st Brigade Combat Team, and they were sending 2,400 members off.
Absolutely. And in fact, those first Minnesotans who went 150 years ago were, of course, the first soldiers in the nation who responded to President Lincoln's call. Minnesota has always had a leadership role. Even the first soldiers in North Africa in the Second World War were from Minnesota. So I think we are carrying on that tradition, and it's a very proud tradition. But Memorial Day gives us a chance to remember again and then to share the stories between generations. This last year, we lost the last of our World War I doughboys, of our World War I veterans. That's a passing of a generation. We're quickly losing our World War II veterans. So Memorial Day is a time where families can make sure that they're passing the stories between generations, and churches can really add to that. So Memorial Day has a lot of important things, but talking between the generations in any way that is possible is one of the key things that people can do, even if they can't get out to Fort Snelling or to some of the other very special events.
We're speaking with Minnesota's Secretary of State Mark Ritchie on this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Secretary, I understand you've been quite busy at the Secretary of State's office helping veterans.
Yes, our office has a number of ways that we work very directly with veterans. A little known fact, I think, is that our office is primarily providing services to Minnesota businesses. It's about two-thirds of our staff, actually. And we have a large number of veterans, both younger veterans, some who are just coming back from service in the Middle East, and older veterans who've now put in 20 years or more, who are retiring, who are creating new businesses. And we do a lot to help them, both the process of getting started and hooking them up with resources. Another thing that our office is engaged in is making sure that our citizens are aware and keeping in mind the sacrifices of our servicemen and women. Our office produces and distributes throughout the state our information on flag etiquette, and people can order that brochure. get one copy or get 1,000. Some veterans organizations will order thousands to provide to their citizens, because folks want to display the flag. They want to do it properly, but sometimes they don't remember all the rules. But this year in particular, because it is that Civil War sesquicentennial, we've dedicated our Blue Book, which is our snapshot history that we do every 2 years, to those veterans from the Civil War. And we've been holding and organizing public events to help the rest of our citizens to remember and connect to that important history of our state.
General Secretary Statesman, busy trying to help the troops as they return. In the last 10 years, you've told me a number of times, over 22,000 Minnesota National Guard troops have been deployed to over 35 countries around the world. A lot of them come back, and they need jobs. They need work, don't they?
They do, Tom. And I want to thank Secretary Ritchie for the great support that he personally and his office generally have provided to all of our veterans, our soldiers and airmen, as they return home from deployments overseas. But if we've learned among the many things we've learned over the last 10 years is that going to war is hard, but so is coming home. And there's big adjustments to be made. And one of the things that's as imposing as any of those challenges is coming back and finding productive, meaningful employment in this economy. So the efforts of people like leaders of our community, like the secretary, go a long way to not only helping with that, but also to signaling to our veterans that their service is valued and appreciated, and that the community stands behind them and is ready to help them when they return.
Mr. Secretary, you and I have talked about this, but these troops come from all over the state. And when they come back, a large number of them need jobs, and I know you're very concerned about that.
Absolutely, and so many of them have incredible leadership skills, amazing ideas that kind of drive. And so that's one thing about the opportunity to create their own business, to be their own boss, so to speak. So we are always aware of the desire of many of our best companies to hire veterans, hooking them, and making sure that they can start their own companies.
Mr. Secretary, is there someone special you think about on Memorial Day?
I always think about my dad, who was a Marine in the Second World War, and he died too young. And many things that I've been able to do in my life, I wish I had a chance to share those with him directly. But that's one part about Memorial Day, is that we can keep people's spirit alive and we can keep their memory alive. And then we can do what President Lincoln asked us to do, which is remembering that it's the task of those of us, the living, to carry on the unfinished work.
Mr. Secretary, you're doing a fantastic job. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. See you again soon.
We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have Captain Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard with us. We'll be right back after a short break. This is a special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Newstalk 100.3 FM. To the special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons, along with Brigadier General Joe Kelly. In this half hour, we're going to talk to the Fort Snelling Memorial Rifle Squad, and we're also going to talk to the Patriot Guard. But joining us right now is Charles Corlath from the Minnesota Fort Snelling Memorial Rifle Squad. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Mr. Corlath.
Thank you for calling.
I understand, sir, that you're a World War II veteran of the United States Navy.
That's right. 1944 to 1948.
And that you've been a member of the Memorial Rifle Squad at Fort Snelling National Cemetery for 25 years.
No. I started in 81. That's 30.
30 years.
Yes, sir.
And how many flags have you folded and presented to family, sir?
Well, somebody said somewhere between 17,000 and 20,000. But I'm not sure, but it's around a 17, I would say.
That's certainly a lot, isn't it?
That's a whole bunch.
Can you tell us how the Memorial Rifle Squad works at Fort Snelling?
Well, we have 125 men on our rifle squad, and 5 days a week, we run about 23, 24 men a day, and we have a squad leader, an assistant squad leader, and we have 7 rifles or 8, whatever we have, and we have our flags. We have the American flag, and we have the other banners that we have, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and we have them out if we can. And we run about a very good ship out there. I think we do as good a job as anybody in the country. So I don't know what else I can say about it. It's just that all the members that belong to the rifle squad want to be there. That's the big point. So what else can I say?
Mr. Korlath, Brigadier General Joe Kelly's with us in the station this morning, and he's got a couple questions for you.
All right.
Well, good morning, Charles. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm very well. Say, I was surprised to hear the number 125. That's a lot of manpower.
Well, we have 5 days a week.
How do you keep your ranks full, and are you always looking for new members, or do you have a waiting list?
Our membership is about, well, I don't know. We're averaging around 77 or 78 years old, and every once in a while we have to get a replacement. Just the other day we got a young lady that joined our squad. So that we are replacing members that are dying off and losing, you know. So we keep a good count. We try to keep it down to around 25 members on a day,
mm-hmm.
And it works pretty good. Our bus is getting a little bit crowded at times, but we have the National Guard sends us 2 men or so during the day to supply our help, but we don't need, we use them all the time on our flags and stuff like that.
Well, thank you. I would like, as a recently retired veteran, I'd like to encourage veterans from my generation to consider being part of the Memorial Rifle Squad as a way for them to continue to serve, because I've paid witness to the great work that you guys do out at Fort Snelling, and I want to compliment you for the dedication and the professionalism that you and your squad show. You're always there to provide meaningful support at a time when our families and fellow soldiers need your support. So thank you for everything that you do.
All you have to do is bring discharge papers that you're honorably discharged, and we'll see if you want to belong. You got to be committed to this outfit. That's the main thing.
Well, you got involved 30 years ago.
Right.
How is it that you came to the rifle squad, Charles?
Well, the man that started it installed me as a commander on my post. And he said, now that you retired, I want you to come out to the rifle squad, and I got a job for you. So, and that was 30 years ago. So I'm still there, and I don't think I ever missed more than 30 days of missing work. I call it work, but it's duty.
Charles, if any of our listeners want to volunteer to join your rifle squad, how do they do that?
Well, like I say, you got to have an honorable discharge, and you're going to have to commit yourself to about 40 weeks a year, one day a week.
How do they contact you, sir?
Memorial Rifle Squad, Fort Snelling.
All right. We understand that the average miles driven to and from cemeteries is about 150,000.
A year.
A year, and that your total volunteer hours annually are about 30,000.
Yes.
You've never missed a day due to weather. When the cemetery's open, you're there.
That's correct. We've never missed one day.
And you run solely on donations, sir.
That's it. We are. We don't have any income other than what the people want to give us. We don't ask for any money.
All right. So if anyone wants to volunteer for the Memorial Rifle Squad or donate some money to the Memorial Rifle Squad, go to the Fort Snelling Memorial Rifle Squad, and you can do that.
That's correct.
Mr. Corlath, you're doing a fantastic job. Thanks for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
I got to tell you one more thing.
Yes, sir.
I've been finance officer for the Rifle Squad for almost 25 years.
You've been a busy guy.
Great. So I'm proud of that, and we are very proud of our unit. That's all.
Well, thank you, sir, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you for calling. Yeah. Goodbye.
General, a couple of months ago, we had an interesting young man on the show. His name was Larry Tillmans, and he was assigned to the 3rd Army, Patton's Army, at the end of World War II, and he was a clerk typist. So he spent some time at the Nuremberg War Trials, and he was also part of that 3rd Army. He was one of the first to get to Dachau to see what had happened there. And we've got a couple of clips I'd like to play from that. Adam, are we ready for those clips? Let's do that.
10,700,000 men, women, and children were put to death in here. And these are the guys that saying they were just obeying orders. Yeah, it was an eerie feeling, one that I saw, and I feel it has to be repeated and repeated and repeated, just like Eisenhower told the soldiers, get it all out now, because somewhere down the line somebody's going to say it's nothing, never happened, and that some people are believing that today.
General, I think that's amazing that General Eisenhower at the end of World War II had the vision to think that at some point in history, people would question whether or not the Holocaust happened. And I think it's just this gentleman was on, and he wanted to make sure that what we knew. And I think that's just fantastic. General Eisenhower said, take the pictures, document it, do everything. I'm sure you've heard on the news that the president of Iran is saying that this didn't happen. And that was an amazing statement by Mr. Tillmans, wasn't it?
It really was, and it's something else to hear Larry's voice as he reflects on that piece of his history, his personal history, and our country's history. The thing that struck me listening to that is it's a reminder that as good and wonderful as the world that we live in is, unfortunately there are bad people out there, and there are bad things that happen, and that creates a requirement for our country to have good young men and women in uniform. They're willing to serve our nation, and today's the day that we need to remember all of those who have done that and paid that ultimate price.
Good people have to stand up, just like that saying says, that Holocaust was evil, and evil will triumph when good men say nothing.
There was another statement he came back with, and I thought on Memorial Day that it was very appropriate to recognize that bad things happen around the world. And that, like the Holocaust, Holocaust was evil, and that all evil needs to flourish is for good men to do nothing. And it gives me a reason why we deploy troops all over the world to counties and provinces and towns we've never heard of, but we're out there serving our country and making sure that these despots, these people are doing things so that our country isn't standing by and not doing anything. And I thought you might like to hear that, sir.
No, I appreciate that a great deal. And Adam beat me to the quote with Larry's follow-on remark there. And again, it just emphasizes again the importance of the willingness of young men and women to stand up and put on the uniform of this country and do what's asked of them at times when our nation needs them. And that means that as a country, we need to be respectful and appreciative of everything that they do, because they end up going all over the world, as you said, Tom, 22,000 soldiers and airmen. That's just from the Minnesota National Guard alone. Have gone to 35 different countries around the world, and most of those places that they've gone and been asked to serve are not vacation spots. They're not garden spots. They're tough and difficult parts of the world, and we ask an awful lot from our men and women in uniform.
And, of course, we've got another 2,400 1st Brigade Combat Team members on the way to Fort McCoy, and they'll be deployed over to Iraq as well.
Yeah, we certainly do, and many of those are people that I consider to be friends or colleagues and comrades that I've served with many times over the years. So I will certainly keep them in my thoughts as we go forward here. But great team led by a tremendous commander, Colonel Eric Kurska, and his leadership team. I know they will do a great job, and they'll continue with the tradition of excellence and service that the 34th Infantry Division and the Red Bulls have demonstrated throughout history.
Thank you, General. We're going to take a short break. And as we go into these breaks today, we've got a CD from the 34th Infantry Red Bull Band we're going to play some music for. We'll be right back with Captain Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard after a short break. This is a special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Newstalk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I am your host, Tom Lyons. My special guest today is retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. In this segment, and thanks to the 34th Infantry Red Bull Band for that lead-in, in this segment we're talking to Captain Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Doug, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, good morning, Tom. Good morning, General Kelly.
Good morning, Doug.
How are you doing on this Memorial Day, sir?
Well, I'm looking out, Tom, and I don't know if I'm going to Mankato on my motorcycle or my truck, but I have a pretty good feeling it's four wheels today.
Have you gotten the weather report on that, Doug?
Well, the thunder and lightning was the first indication.
I'm sure it was. How many missions have you got going today, Doug?
Well, today we've got a couple different deployment ceremonies, Tom. We've got Mankato and a couple other locations. They're listed in our calendar. They're going to be spending some time with our deploying 34th Infantry. Memorial Day, too, with the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We support the State Vet Cemetery up in Little Falls at Camp Ripley, Fort Flying National Military Cemetery, as well as in the veterans' homes here in the state. So we're doing a flag line at the Minneapolis Veterans Home as an example.
Doug, for those who might not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about the Minnesota Patriot Guard?
You know, Tom, we're an entirely volunteer organization. You do not have to be a veteran, and you do not have to have a motorcycle, but our primary mission is to stand for the funeral for those fallen in hostile action, and that's why Memorial Day is very important to us, because that's what it's all about. We also stand for veteran services and funerals upon request, and as we've been chatting about in the last minute or so, we've been very involved in the deployment for the 34th Infantry. We've been standing at all the deployment ceremonies. I think we've had 15 so far in the last 2 weeks, as well as being involved in escorting the buses from every corner of the state all the way down to Fort McCoy.
Tell me about these bus trips, Doug. This is something special, isn't it?
You know, this actually started when the first BCT came home in 2007, Tom. We met every bus at the border, and we brought them all the way home. And what we found out is that these soldiers on the bus like seeing those motorcycles in front of them, because they've known that we've had their back and their brothers and sisters back while they've been on deployment and in harm's way. So we'd take these buses from their armory or wherever they're coming from, and we do handoffs at a couple different points. We take them all the way up to the gates of Fort McCoy. During the ceremony as well, we present them with a Patriot Guard rider's flag, a 3x5 bright yellow flag that we've sent around the state that had signatures put on, including the sitting governor at the time. And we tell these soldiers that when you're having a really bad day and you're homesick and you think it's no longer your family cares about you, you look at this flag and remember that all of Minnesota cares about you, and all of Minnesota loves you, and all of Minnesota has your back.
Well, Doug, as a former soldier and a guy who's gone to Iraq and then come back home, I want to tell you thank you and let you know that your organization has exactly that effect that you're trying to have. Your group is one of the most consistent and hardest working organizations that's out there supporting us. You mentioned the deployment ceremonies, the welcome home ceremonies, as well as the funerals. There really is nothing quite like being on that bus or pulling up to a building or walking through a gauntlet of flags held by members of the Patriot Guard. It truly means something. It gives each and every one of us in uniform a memorable moment when we see your organization there on, with the bikes and the flags flying, and we do feel appreciated. We feel appreciated and loved. So I want to tell you once again, thank you for everything that you do, and let you know that everybody that your organization touches feels the same way.
Thank you, General Kelly. I wish all 5,000 of our members in Minnesota could hear that. It's our volunteers who do all this work, and you know we've been this will be our fifth year of being in existence, and you know, we came into being to stand for those who had fallen in combat, and we've expanded our mission scope to include those currently serving, and it's I can't describe the honor that I feel, and I know that our members feel, to be invited and to be part of this exercise at all points with the military. So I don't know, we always call it the thank you argument, that we'll just go thank you back and forth all the time, but there's not enough words to describe our gratitude for those who are standing in those lines today and getting those buses today, because without them, we don't have freedom.
Doug, you went on over 500 missions last year?
Oh, my goodness, Tom, yeah. We had a number of different, as the missions that we focus on, we had 175 veterans' funerals we stood for last year. I believe it was 40 days for the 8 KIAs that we had in Minnesota. We also stand for active duty and currently serving, and so it was a lot of different missions that we're invited to, and some really sad and tough days with the funerals, particularly those we lose in combat, and those we lose once they're home, and you know the echoes of war follow them along. And those are our primary and core mission. Those are the ones we will always be in existence for.
Doug, I've told you this before. Earlier this year, we lost the grandfather of my grandchildren on the other side. And it was a cold January day, and we asked for a mission, and your guys came out to the church. Mm-hmm. And they were there all morning, about 20 of them, lining both sides of the entrance, standing there with their vests on and their flags. And it was powerful and emotional.
Yeah.
And when I called you and thanked you for it, you told me that's why you wear sunglasses.
Well, you know, that is, you know, we look like we're tough old bikers standing there in our black leather jackets and motorcycle vests and, you know, hats of all types, you know, usually with a branch someone served them. But, you know, that's why we wear those dark sunglasses, because there isn't one mission or one feeling that we don't go to that we well up a little bit when you look at the family, and particularly when they come around, as your family did, Tom, and shake our hands and say thank you. And, as you know, there's, if we can be any part of any healing or any peace, you know, that's what we want to do. I've had my own experience with being on that side of the flag line, Tom. My very good friend and neighbor was a Ranger in World War II. And he literally went into Pointe-à-Hoc in France and walked to Czechoslovakia before they sent him home. And when he passed away, the Patriot Guard was there for his funeral. As they come out of that church and the sun is shining and the flags are waving and the veterans are saluting, that was my own experience with it. And so if I ever question why we do something, I just remember to that day of being on that side of it, and all I felt in that mission too.
It's a proud moment when I saw my son go out and shake hands with everyone, every member of the line.
Yeah.
When he lost his father-in-law, who was, by the way, a Vietnam veteran, served in 1968.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, we, you and I have talked about this, Tom. I think, you know, our existence is, you know, I wish I was here. I wish we'd have been here in 1963. And I wish we would have welcomed every one of those returning military members from Vietnam. And we would put a flag line between anybody protesting them and their return, and we would have someone to say thank you. And as you served in Vietnam as well, Tom, I should have been there to say thank you then. And the best I can do is say thank you now, Tom.
Well, we're doing it now, and you're doing it great. Now, Doug, you've got a fundraising ride coming up.
We do, June 18th in Ham Lake. We have, it's called the Patriot Ride. It'll be our sixth year. We do it in conjunction with Dennis Kirk, who's the primary sponsor, and we're the presenting sponsors. And last year, we had about 3,000 motorcycles, and we're expecting with, you know, as we call it, Bluebird Days, not like today, you know, more than that. And it's a fundraising event that really helps us in the MMAF, but it also really, it's a day of supporting our military. And again, you know, there's nothing like 3,000 motorcycles starting up, and we had a Black Hawk helicopter last year lift off to take us down to lead the ride out. And it's a big day for us. So it's the Patriot Ride, thepatriotride.org. All funds go to supporting our group, the Patriot Guard and MMAF. But it's really a day to come out. It's open to the public, and you can come out and spend the day with us. So it's thepatriotride.org.
Doug, we're just about out of time. You're doing great work. Keep it up, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, John Kelly.
Yep. Thanks, Doug.
For our listeners, coming up in the second hour, we will have some information. We'll have the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, on with us. We'll be right back after this short break. This is a special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My special guest host today is retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. And in this second hour of the show, we're going to talk to the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelledo. We'll learn about some fundraising for the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. And we're going to welcome the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, to the show. General Kelly, the first hour went pretty quick, didn't it?
Time flies on live radio, Tom.
It sure does. General, I wanted to talk a little bit about your career. You retired recently, and you spent a lot of good years with the military.
Well, I did, Tom, and mine's a pretty humble story. I don't know if it's ready for prime time, but when I graduated from high school, I grew up in Olivia, Minnesota, out in west central Minnesota. Soldiering was probably one of the furthest things from my mind. My dad was a soldier. He served 26 years in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And while I admired my father greatly at that age, you tend to go in the opposite direction sometimes of where your parents point you. But I was finishing my freshman year at St. John's and was trying to figure out how I was going to pay for that second year. And one of the things I looked at was potentially joining the Minnesota National Guard and enrolling in the ROTC program. So in May of 1980, I did enlist as a fire direction specialist in the unit, my hometown unit out in Olivia, and went to basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey. Survived that, and when I came back, I thought, well, if I'm going to be in the Army, I want to be in charge of something. So when I went back to St. John's that fall, I enrolled in the ROTC program, and then a couple years later, received my commission as a second lieutenant of field artillery, because in that part of the state and in my hometown unit, we were a cannon unit. One of the fondest memories I have of those days is there was a time when both my father and my brother served with me in that unit, which kind of shows the hometown nature of our National Guard and also kind of the family business, if you will, of the United States military.
General, when you were in college, did you have any notion that you might stay in for 30 years?
No, Tom. In fact, I spent a lot of time thinking about what was the minimum amount I was going to have to do to meet my obligation, so then I could get out and get on with the rest of my life. And I say that in all truth. I remember my hand shaking that first enlistment contract for 6 years. Heavens, I hadn't done anything for 6 years in my entire life to that point. So, no, I absolutely did not see myself staying for a whole career.
What changed it, General?
Well, I think a little bit of experience. One thing is that we all go through a remarkable transformation, I think, when we go through that initial entry training and we go from being Joe the student and Joe the football player and Joe the whatever to becoming Joe the soldier. So I went through that transformation, and the more I served, the more duty I did, I discovered that I wasn't half bad as a soldier, and I found that I liked my time in uniform and found more passion, more energy from that than I did in my full-time job. I went through school and became an accountant, and I found that I liked being in uniform, being a soldier. More than that, a temporary opportunity popped up at Camp Ripley to work full-time. I took that, and for better or worse, as they say, the rest is history, and once they got me, even though I was going to leave after 6 years, I hung around for the next 25.
And did a good job of it, sir. You and I have talked about this off the air before, but when I was in Vietnam, in those days there was a draft, and a lot of those soldiers that were part of the Army and even some in the Air Force enlisted in the Air Force to get out of the draft. So there was kind of a cancer on the Corps, if you will, because a lot of folks didn't want to be there. But what I've seen in the last 3-4 years with you and General Nash and everyone else I've met is The Minnesota National Guard is an organization that people want to be a part of. They're professional and passionate, and from top to bottom, they do a great job. It's really a whole different atmosphere, isn't it?
I think one of the things that is truly remarkable is, as you said, Tom, everybody who's in the service today is there because they want to be there and because they're willing to do the work that's going to be asked of them. And when you get into that all-volunteer force, you have that organization of the willing, the quality, the professionalism, the dedication, and then, of course, the results that come with that are truly remarkable. The days of, okay, Kelly, either you join the Army or you go to jail, those days are long gone. Those kinds of days are decades behind us. In fact, the standards for getting into the armed forces today are actually quite high, and we have a lot of young men and women, unfortunately, in this country that can't meet those standards, whether they're the basic physical standards or some of the others. So it really is a remarkable organization to be part of when everybody that's here chooses to be.
General, a couple of months ago, we had a chief warrant officer on, Ryan Roberts, who's an aviator. He flies a helicopter for the Minnesota National Guard. And I just want to play you a little clip from that interview and then get your reaction to it. Adam?
Went to school Fort Rucker, Alabama for that, and then came home and turned a couple of wrenches, but quickly went over and became an aviator.
How did that happen?
Good story, actually. I was brand new in the military and didn't know much, and I had a buddy who had maybe a couple of years on me for experience, and said, hey, look, they're pulling a board to select new aviators. I said, nah, I'm too young. I can't do that, or too new. You know, I'm not ready for that. Just come on, do it. You know, you get your name out there and see what they say. So based kind of on a little positive peer pressure, did it. I guess I did something right and impressed them during the interview, and some of my, I was an honor graduate during that mechanic school and all that stuff, so that probably helped out. But selected me, and about a little over a year later, I was down at Fort Rucker, Alabama again, but this time to go to pilot school, not mechanic school.
Changed your life, didn't it?
Absolutely. One little conversation, a little dare almost changed my life completely.
General, just like you, this young man started out in the Minnesota National Guard, who's going to be a helicopter mechanic. Next thing you know, he's flying helicopters. It can be quite an experience, can it?
It certainly can. When I was listening to Chief Roberts there, I thought of a phrase that a friend of mine who used to be the commander of the recruiting battalion here in Minnesota had, and that was better life through military service. And there are so many of us that have worn the uniform of the armed forces of this country that end up with a better life and have opportunities that we never would have had if we had not made the decision to raise our right hand. I don't think any organization in the world does as good a job at developing the young women that come into the ranks and give them opportunities to develop and go places and do things than the Armed Forces of the United States. And I got many blessings in my life, the majority of which I can trace back to the decision to put on this uniform.
General, one last quick question. I've been asked before, the people that are in the Minnesota National Guard now know and understand that the shape of the mission has changed. They know the deployments are here. This is not a surprise to them, is it?
It's no surprise at all. I've often said the weekend warriors, the summertime soldiers, have long since departed our ranks. Everybody who joins or decides to stay in does so, I think, with the full understanding that of what's going to be asked of them. And I think people need to appreciate and respect that. These people are volunteering to stand in harm's way, stand between the good people and the good things here in our country and the bad things out in the rest of the world.
Thank you, General Kelly. We'll be right back with the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelido, after a short break. This is a special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host for the day is retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. And thanks for the 34th Infantry Red Bull Band for that introduction back. Our guest in this segment is the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelido. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you on this Memorial Day, Commissioner?
I'm good. I've been busy and will be busy again.
You've got a few events coming up today?
Yes. The last 2 days I've been in both out by Hastings and then yesterday at our state cemetery at Camp Ripley, Little Falls, and then today at Fort Snelling, and then finishing up at our veterans' home in Minneapolis.
You do keep on the move, don't you, Commissioner?
Yes, but that's great. It's going very, very well.
Good morning, boss. It's great to hear your voice.
Well, good to hear you, Joe. How you been?
I'm very well, sir. Right. Thank you. You are, like Tom said, you. I thought maybe you'd slow down a little bit when you left your position as the adjutant general, but it sounds like you're picking up the pace.
Well, you know, it's that time of year. It's to get out and visit with the people, and it's important that we remember. And to be honest with you, I enjoy it.
Commissioner, is there someone special that you think about on Memorial Day?
Yes, I do. I think, actually a number, but I go back to my days from Vietnam, and one of my high school classmates won the Medal of Honor, and he got that right toward the end of the war, and it was just, you know, it gets close and personal, so it's, yeah, I do think it's someone special.
Well, it's a day, as General Kelly said earlier, it's not a day to mourn, but it's a day to honor those that have given their lives and more.
You know, that's so true. And probably what I was telling the people yesterday, I went to this small church out by Hastings on St. Croix Trail. And it was just surreal. It was just... The cemetery there next to a church that was built before the Civil War started. And they had cemeteries from the Civil War, Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, you know, and that community and what they gave to this country is phenomenal. And yet the setting was beautiful, just like Camp Ripley, the state cemetery, was yesterday. Beautiful. So... to know that our fallen have been honored that way is special.
Commissioner, for our listeners that don't know, you spent a long career in the military and just finished up 7 years as the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard last fall. And then we thought you were going to take a little time off, but Governor Dayton appointed you as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. How has the transition gone from commanding the troops to now taking care of all of our veterans in Minnesota?
Well, you know, it's a natural transition. At first, you know, when I left the Adjutant General job to being retired, if you will, was a pretty steep drop, and it just wasn't working. But it was starting to get comfortable. But I threw my hat into the ring because I just felt there was more to do, and I'm honored that Governor Dayton chose me also. And it's been a whirlwind. It's taken me a couple months, to be honest with you, to get my feet on the ground, learn the people, know their talents and what their strengths are, and let them do that. But they are truly, truly an excellent community to work with. It's like being in the Guard. The thing I like most is they don't drill on weekends. So, you know, from that viewpoint, but... you know, it's just an honor to work with them. It really is. But what this state doesn't realize is the amount of volunteerism they give to this state. And, you know, our homes would be in really serious straits if it wasn't for the volunteers. So when you get one of our homes, I equate it to probably 32 full-time positions donated just by being there. So it's phenomenal.
From the volunteers.
Yes.
Commissioner, can you tell us how many veterans are there in Minnesota, and what do you do as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, right now, you know, the number is floating with the number of the passing of the World War II generation. But according to the Department of Veterans Affairs, we have 390-plus thousand veterans in the state of Minnesota. Most of them are just in the community. They're just the neighbor next door, if you will. But we also, we just have a lot of them. We are, I believe, a true economic engine for the state of Minnesota. My job as the Department of Veterans Affairs is to make sure they're taken care of, to be the conduit, if you will, to their GI benefits, and making sure they receive those in a timely manner, and also to, well, just watch out for them. Because it's over $1 billion industry in the state of Minnesota, and I don't want to put a business factor on it because they transcend that. But it's and normally the ones we deal with are the ones that are hurting. They're the ones that, for example, Agent Orange is type 2 diabetes, pancreas cancer, those types of things. Our veteran homes and the Veterans Administration hospitals are taking great care of them, and we just help them through that that minefield, if you will.
Say, Commissioner, you mentioned that the number of veterans in Minnesota is fluctuating as we lose some of our older veterans. What are some of the challenges your department sees as they deal with my generation of veterans, those guys from Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere?
Well, fine. You know, it's excellent question, Joe. For example, we have 14,400 Iraqi vets taking advantage of the GI Bill. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, but we bring them home. We make sure they're taken care of. We get them either the number two things is find me a good job or give me the education to get that good job. And, of course, always take care of my family, which the Military Family Foundation does excellent work with. So we're getting them back there. We're doing job fairs. And also what we're doing is getting our veterans organizations to be, I like to call them the bird dogs. They're out there finding these young veterans that are coming back home, connecting them with their county veterans service officers, helping them get into the process and the procedure to get them involved and to help them continue the leadership in the communities. So there's a variety of things that are happening, but it's a different generation also. They are more technology savvy. You know, the issues of Facebook and Twitter and all of that are things that we are adopting. So,
Commissioner, we've just got a few seconds left. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners on this Memorial Day 2011?
Well, first of all, Tom, I just want to say thank you and your show for just taking care of our veterans. And I want the general public to realize there's something I found, and it was in the Battle Hymn of the Republic. As he died to make us holy, let us die to make men free. And it's oftentimes been changed to let us live. But people need to realize the definition of a veteran is someone who really said, I will give all it takes to include my life to do what I am tasked to do.
Thank you, Commissioner. We're about out of time. This is a special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My special co-host for the day is retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly. And this segment, in this half hour, we're going to have an interview with Scott Lear from Burl Oaks, and we're also going to talk to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. But joining us right now is Scott Lear from Burl Oaks Golf Club. Scott, are you with us?
I am. It's great to be here.
How's the weather out there today, Scott?
Unfortunately, it's a little wet, and we got some lightning going through right now, so we have nobody playing golf.
Uh-oh. Is it going to clear up today?
Yeah, we should get some in the morning. Should work out pretty good, but then it's supposed to come back this afternoon. So,
well, you're doing a little special fundraiser today. General Kelly is here with me. Can you tell us what you're up to?
Yeah, I sure am. One of our members, Steve Karolewski, is involved with the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, and earlier this spring, he asked me if we could donate a couple rounds of golf for your fundraiser for your auction. And I said, geez, you know, on Memorial Day, why don't we, once we get this weather out of here, I'm going to be up on the first tee collecting donations for the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. And we put out an email last Thursday, and I just mentioned that what we're doing, and that if they weren't playing today, they could, donate to the foundation, and we've got over $1,200 already donated from our members, so it's a very special organization and you know, to help our heroes. It's something that everybody feels strongly about.
Well, good morning, Scott. Joe Kelly here. Thanks. We'll hope for some good weather for a very good cause. And the Minnesota Military Family Foundation does a tremendous amount of good taking care of needy military families and their members. So we appreciate what you're doing. So we'll hope for sunny skies here this afternoon.
Yeah. Yep. For sure.
Scott, we'd just like to thank you for helping us with the MMFF. As you know, General Kelly and I are both on that board, and since 2004, we've given out grants to over 800 Minnesota military families, totaling $1.4 million, and it's a financial safety net for those families, and it's critically important that folks like you step up and help us, and just like to thank you and Burl Oaks and Steve Karolewski for the great job you're doing.
Yeah, it's our pleasure, and it's the least we can do.
All right, Scott, we'll hope to see you a little later, and we hope the weather clears for us.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. Thanks, guys.
Yep, thanks Scott.
General, and it's great of Scott to do that work for us, and nice talking to him this morning, and hope everybody gets a chance to golf later today. On a show we had a couple of months ago, we had a gentleman on by the name of Harold Curvers, and Mr. Curvers was in World War II, and was immediately stationed. He was part of one of the Brainerd divisions, and he was stationed over in the Philippines, and before he hardly ever even got started, we had the surrender at Bataan, and we've got a couple of clips that we're going to play from Harold Curvers, and here they are.
I saw bodies. I never once saw shooting or bayoneting, but I saw the bodies there that had been. We were the first ones out of the Batons, so that we didn't have the chance to see what was happening to the rest of them that followed us.
And you were headed for which camp?
O'Donnell was the name of the first camp. Capus was the name of the town. And then we went to, I was there maybe 4, 5, 6. Time, you don't
gets
remember
away from
half
it.
The things. Then they were taken to O'Donnell.
And how were the conditions there?
Oh, it was terrible. They had 40, 50 bodies out there every day. I mean, it's Americans.
The Americans that died each day.
And you know what was strange about that? I used to go out and see if any of them from our outfit that I might know. And I don't know what it was, and I didn't think of it until years later. I noticed that there was a lot of them were redheads that were lying there. Say there were 40 bodies out there. It seemed like about 20 of them or so would be either blondes or redheads. It seems like that complexion couldn't take that temperature, that heat or whatever.
General, this gentleman was in to see us. He was 92 years old, and we surprised him. We sent him down to a Twins game the next day, and he raised the flag. But at the beginning of the war, he was captured, was on the Bataan Death March. He called it a walk because they were so worn out by the time it started, and then he spent the rest of the war in captivity with the POWs. Seems to me that on Memorial Day, that's something that we should play and talk about.
It certainly is, Tom, and it is powerful to hear Harold recount his experience at Bataan. The 194th Cavalry Squadron is that unit that you made reference to from the Brainerd Baxter Crosby areas. We still have a few of those veterans, those survivors, with us. I'm struck as I listen to Harold talk about how the remarkable things, the extraordinary things that ordinary people will do, can do when pressed into service to our nation, because soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines are just like you and I. They're ordinary people, but oftentimes they are pressed into service and have to do heroic and historic and challenging things. And to hear him reflect back on that truly is powerful, and it reminds us that the impact of our service, particularly our wartime service, has on our lives.
And of course, he sat here and didn't feel like a hero. He just thought he did his duty and did the best he could to get through the war. General, we've got some more clips that I want to play. And this was an interesting interview that we had about 6 months ago with Chief Warrant Officer Trigvi Skor. And it was about the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division van. And I thought it was curious that the general would take his band with him to war, but as we'll see in a moment playing these clips, there were some pretty good reasons why.
We, I believe, play a critical role in supporting the soldiers, providing morale. And when you think about, you know, Toby Keith and other stars coming to support the troops in Iraq and in Afghanistan, that's awesome, and that's a big lift to morale when you get to see these national acts. But oftentimes is the case, they can't go to all the small patrol bases. So we traveled extensively throughout Iraq, convoying and flying in Blackhawks and Chinooks to all the places where soldiers were, providing them music and a breath of fresh air and a slice of home. We identified that we wanted to connect with the Iraqi people in a special way. At these ceremonies, there was often a counterpart of General Nash or whoever the leader was of the ceremony. And when you make an effort to connect with people as with music as an international language, you know, what better way to do it when we're there to when we're in Iraq to help build nationalism is to perform their anthem and do it in their language. And we had some very talented vocalists.
General, I thought it was fascinating that when General Nash was there in charge of the troops in the southern half of Iraq, that when he was meeting with the Iraqi troops at the beginning of these ceremonies, one of the Red Bull Infantry Band members would sing the Iraqi national anthem in their language. What a nice way to start that.
Well, it is fascinating, and I think things like music, kind of a common language among all the people of the world. I think it illustrates that it's that when the military is involved with things, it's not just about guns and ammunition and kinetic forces, but it's also about many of the softer things and the way that we can connect to the people that we're working with and working for. Trigvi Skaar, Chief Skaar, is one of my favorite soldiers, and that unit that he's responsible for, the band, is a special unit. And you wouldn't think of the impact that a unit like that can have, a band. Simplistically, people would think, well, they just provide music. But when you look at some of the strategic effect that they had with talent and ability and effect that only they could bring to the operation, it really illustrates the complexity of some of the military operations that we have today, that it takes hard skills and soft skills.
What a sign of respect to open up joint ceremonies by playing the United States anthem and then playing the Iraqi national anthem and having it sung. He said that in some of the places they went, the Iraqis hadn't even heard it sung.
Now, that's a special thing. You think about what a special person that it takes to learn to sing that anthem in a non-native, non-natural tongue. That tells you something again about the talent and the dedication of the young people that serve with us.
There's a lot going on when you command and you take a lot of our young soldiers off to war, isn't there, General?
There's a lot going on. More complexity than I think most of us appreciate.
We'll be right back with the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, after a short break. This is a special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM.
To people who believe in God, pray for peace.
Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is recently retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly. In this segment of the show, we have a special guest with us, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, sir.
Morning, Tom.
General, I would imagine on Memorial Day, you're going to have another busy day.
Well, actually, Tom, it's going to be less this year than in years past. I am heading down to Mankato later on this morning and will be attending a departure ceremony for the headquarters and headquarters company of the 2nd Battalion, 135th Infantry.
In general, we've been talking about all morning about events around the state and the departure ceremonies around the state, but Memorial Day is a special day where we stop to take a moment to think about those who have given their lives in service of their country, and Later on today at 3 o'clock, we have a moment of remembrance. I'm sure that's a special day for you.
It is, Tom. It's one of those things, as you know, you've served this many years, as you well know from your days in Vietnam, and we all have served with and have known people who have given their lives for their country.
And, sir, on Memorial Day, I understand, do you have a family history of military service, General?
Well, actually, Tom, I do. I have a great uncle that served in World War One, and I had four uncles from my mother's side that served during World War Two, and fortunately and almost unbelievably, all four survived. One served with the 34th Division, started off at Camp Claiborne, Louisiana, where the 34th went to train prior to World War II, and served then all the way through Ireland and further training in England, North Africa, and finally in Italy, where he was wounded, and went in as a private, came out as a tech sergeant, and so pretty proud of his service in the 34th Red Bull Division, and had two brothers, one served in Korea, and then another one later in post-World War Germany.
You've really got a history with the 34th Infantry Division, don't you, General?
Well, it goes back a ways, Tom. Yes, it does.
Including that recent longest deployment.
Well, we do. We had the 1st Brigade Combat Team that served the 22 months, 6 months at Camp Shelby, and then the extended tour in Iraq during the surge, which certainly seemed like it has proved to be successful. And then that same 1st Brigade Combat Team is now heading back to Kuwait again, and that's one of the units that I'll be going to the departure ceremony today. And the headquarters company is already in Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, in their post-mobilization training in preparation to going to Kuwait.
Good morning, General. Joe Kelly here.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Hey, sir, I know when you were the commanding general of the division, you had the opportunity to go to Italy. You mentioned your relative earlier. Take a trip to Italy for an event to honor the Red Bull veterans. And on Memorial Day, I think it's appropriate maybe to ask you to talk a little bit about that as you looked at Italy's opportunity to honor many of U.S. soldiers who fell on their soil. Can you tell us a little bit about that trip that you took to Italy and the event there to honor U.S. soldiers and Red Bulls?
Sure, I'd be happy to. While we were deployed to Iraq, 34th Division was deployed to Iraq. An event was taking place in Italy, north of Florence, Italy, to honor the 34th Division at a location called Hill 810. And it was just short or just north of a small village, Vernio, Italy. And so I had an opportunity to do that, and a great Minnesotan, Tech Sergeant Don Singelstad, was able to make that trip along with his grandson to Italy. And so I and Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Olson, our communications director here in the state, and at that time my public affairs officer in Italy, were able to take 3 days out of Iraq and fly through Kuwait up into Germany, back into Italy for this event that was going to happen on a Saturday, and met with Tech Sergeant Don Singelstad at this village. And you have to be there to fully appreciate, I think, what the Italians have felt for Americans and the liberation of Italy from Nazi Germany during that time. And the outpouring by that small village was, you know, this many years later, was just unbelievable. And so we took Don and his grandson and another individual from Madison, Wisconsin, who was bound to a wheelchair and served in headquarters company of the 135 Infantry of the 34th Division, up to Hill 810, where they met with resistance fighters that were teenagers at the time when Don was fighting with all three regiments of the 34th Division at Hill 810. It was quite a moving experience to see Don interfacing again with these people that he probably never even met, the resistance fighters. But they were there on that hill dedicating that monument to the 34th Division.
We're speaking with the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, on this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. General, you've had a pretty busy year in the last year taking over as the Adjutant General. How's that been going?
Well, as you stated, Tom, it's been a busy year since November 1st, and certainly we've had the transition of a new governor from Governor Plenty to Governor Dayton, and so the transition with his entire new team. Certainly we spent a lot of time in preparations for the flooding, as General Kelly is aware of, at the Red River area out in the western portion of Minnesota and Montevideo, and certainly then through the Twin City area down through Hastings and traveling the state and preparing the state for that pending flood, then dealing with a new legislature and a budget year, how it affects all of our agencies is still one of those things we have to get through before the 1st of July. And then the second largest deployment of units from Minnesota with the 1st Brigade Combat Team, as we're still mobilizing those units through the end of this month. And so all three of those areas certainly took a lot of time and effort. But we have great soldiers, great men and women serving both in the air and the Army National Guard here in Minnesota. And we're still having soldiers and airmen deployed around the country. You know, people probably don't realize, Tom, but Joe certainly does, that we have airmen and soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, Qatar, Kyrgyzstan, Kosovo, and then some other less threatening locations such as Spain, Italy, Honduras, and Guam. So we are totally engaged both here in the state of Minnesota with our citizen soldiers and internationally doing our nation's bidding.
You're really fully engaged both in the federal mission and the state mission, and very, very busy first year in office, sir.
It has, but the time goes fast, Tom. And before we run out of time, though, Tom, I certainly want to thank you for your service on this Memorial Day, but also thank you for all that you do for our men and women in uniform, especially what you do each and every Sunday morning on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. And when I listen to that, I always come away with something that I didn't know. And so it's really just a great program and great service that you've done, and a well-produced program. And I would encourage all of your listeners today to tune in on Sunday mornings and listen to your great program.
Thank you, sir. We've just got a couple of minutes left, but I know that you've got 2,400 Minnesota National Guards troops on the way to Fort McCoy. Can you just tell us a little bit? I've interviewed Colonel Kerska a couple of times, but it sounds like top to bottom, you've got some real great, professional, passionate, caring troops going on the way to a dangerous mission.
Tom, he does, and you know, Colonel Kerska has great leaders, great non-commissioned officers, and he's pretty fortunate too to also have some great experience of previous deployments among his soldiers that are going, which will add to those that will be their first time deployment. And I believe he's probably got close to 60% of his force is not deployed before, which one would think would be unusual in this time of protracted conflict after 10 years since 9/11. But that's pretty much what we see across all of our units that we're deploying. We have a mix of veterans that have served at least once, sometimes two, three, or four times, along with our new men and women that are deploying. So He has a good cross-section, and he's certainly a great leader. He's been deployed, I believe this will be his third time, and so he has the experience and maturity to lead those great men and women, and they're well-trained and equipped, and they'll do their mission extremely well, and they'll come back with success and honor.
General Nash, thanks for joining us on this Memorial Day.
Well, thank you, Tom and Joe, and thank you both for your service, and again, I would encourage all of your listeners to take a moment today of their family gatherings to remember our fallen.
Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My special co-host today is recently retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. General, in this hour, we're going to talk to a number of guests, including the governor, a little later in the hour. But before we get to that, on the telephone joining us today is a gentleman named Dutch Cragen. Dutch, good morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you on this Memorial Day?
Well, a little bit exhausted because we had so much going on yesterday in our Family Fun Day with a terrific turnout of our own guests and people in the area to honor not only ahead of time, but to try to collect some extra money for soldiers and their spouses, mainly out of Fort Ripley, but those in the area, who are serving in Iraq and also Afghanistan. And our major speaker was Colonel Scott St. Xavier, who is the commandant at Fort Ripley. So he gave a wonderful speech right there at Lakeside before we started raising funds by having fun on the beach.
He's an energetic, passionate guy, isn't he?
He is, and he also served two tours in Iraq. So he gave a little comment a little about some of his colleagues, and three of whom were saving a fallen comrade and hit by a landmine and blew up and died, while the person on the stretcher has survived to talk about it. And so it was personal. And we had also my night auditor's son was just dispatched to Afghanistan and within a month stepped on a landmine and is losing his foot. So it was a close-to-home experience for all of us who were there, and a lot of veterans, a lot of kids, all having a good time, but raising some money for at a silent auction and also games we had on the beach with Humvees, rides, and rock climbing walls brought up from Fort Ripley, or Camp Ripley, and food and drinks and just a good old time to raise money, because we knew that today would be a whole lot more somber, but yesterday was a day for fun.
We're speaking with Dutch Cragen from Cragen's Resort and Golf Courses up in Brainerd. And Dutch, you are a veteran yourself, aren't you?
Yes, Korea was my war. But in those days, you know, we never did settle it. In fact, the Korean thing is still never had a peace. So it was appropriate, I think, in this day and age that we're recognizing, especially the National Guard and the reservists and so on, who've been called back twice, three times. I met one gentleman who's been back three times. And so we've been for about 6 years now having free golf at the golf course for veterans of all different divisions and from all wars. And this has grown. It's grown. So we've had to have it 2 days, so today and tomorrow. And the lineup is already fierce over there, just in between rain showers. Right now, it's at this moment, it's not raining. But we've got several dozen guys already out playing, and we expect hundreds to come up and play golf. And their spouses will sit around the lobby eating coffee, drinking coffee and having cookies and stuff like that. And this year, in the last 2 years, we've had fishing off the dock for those who are not golfing. And some people may want to take the boats out too. So we're recognizing our veterans by giving them some pleasure on water and also golfing.
Dutch, thank you for all you do, and thank you for joining us this morning on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir. We also have on the line with us today retired Chief Master Sergeant Steve Campos. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, General Kelly.
Good morning, Chief.
How are you doing on this Memorial Day, Steve?
Very, very well. Again, just like many others, a little bit exhausted of all the things happening, but it is it's just an honor to honor all those who come before on who are serving now, and even the ones who will be serving in the future.
Chief, anyone special you think about on Memorial Day?
There was, actually. At the event in Hastings that General Shelton mentioned earlier, there was one of the KIAs of this year was an Air Force officer who was from Special Forces. It reminded me of a Special Forces person who died in 1996, who I met in 1995 during one of our mill-to-mill exercises and down in Ecuador, and just a wonderful person, but then passed away in a helicopter accident the next year. And at the event on Saturday, we read a small paragraph of each KIA, which were 11, that were honored Saturday. And it reminded me of that of that Major Hill from the 6th Special Ops down in Florida. So it was a surreal event on Saturday, and I was just very honored that General Shalatova was able to take time off when I asked him to speak at that event.
Chief, we've just got a couple of minutes before we have to go to a break, and I know you've got a lot of good things going on over in Washington County. Can you share some things with us quickly?
Yes, Washington County, first of all, since it's one of the first Yellow Ribbon counties in the United States, all the cities have been creating a lot of synergy and a lot of communication between the cities, which include Hugo, Stillwater, Woodbury, Lake Elmo, Matamidi, and soon to be Cottage Grove and the Lower St. Croix Alliance. Many events, but we share all those things, and in order to do that, to help the deployed families of military members, we have created that synergy in order to have a great partnership and to have a one team, one fight approach in order to support our military family members.
Say, Chief, as a retired serviceman yourself for 35 years in the Air Force, you know how humbling it is to be supported by the community. What do you think the big motivating factors quickly are out in those Yellow Ribbon communities and counties? Why do they do what they do?
Well, it's thank you, sir. What happened, especially when I go to some of the schools that collect items for the troops, when I ask all the kids to raise their hand if they know an uncle or aunt who were in the military, or a father or mother or anyone in the military, all the hands go up, which means that all families are affected. And every family that I've talked to, or every corporation or any entity, they want to help, they want to serve and honor the people who are serving our country right now.
So Chief, I know you've got probably more cities over there in Washington County that are part of this than anyone, and I want to thank you because you're going to help us with the Minnesota Military Family Foundation Golf Classic coming up in August. But,
absolutely, sir. In fact, I have Lieutenant Colonel Hiram Mann will be donating a signed T-shirt and some other memorabilia in a nice case. And that will be one of the silent auction pieces, which, of course, you introduced Colonel Mann earlier.
It was fun talking to him on the radio. Even at his age, I think he could probably still fly that aircraft.
Yeah, one of our Tuskegee Airmen.
Absolutely. And, yes, he probably could fly, I think.
Chief, just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts on Memorial Day?
Lieutenant Colonel Trancy Williams, who you met, and I will be, along with the Yellow Ribbon Outreach Coordinators, will be at the Paddle Ford boat ride today, honoring veterans, and all veterans are free to ride that. And then we will also talk about Yellow Ribbon communities on that ride.
Chief, keep up the good work over there, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Jen and Kelly.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye now.
This is the special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My special co-host today is recently retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly. For those of you that are just tuning in for the morning show, they'll be back tomorrow, and we'd like to invite you to join us every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Each week, we bring on some information about the military in Minnesota, including the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, to talk about veterans' benefits, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program to help support our troops and their families. And then we have some military history information that we put on, along with the mailbag. So if anybody has any questions that they have for us, please send them in to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.org. General, we had on some time ago, Chief Campos mentioned retired Lieutenant Colonel Hiram Mann, who is a Tuskegee Airman. And If we can, we're going to play a clip of him on the show from a couple months ago.
I wanted to fly for my country. This is my country, too. And I wanted to do what I could to keep the Nazis away from the shores of America. So I attempted to volunteer to get into a flying training program. And I had no idea what I should have studied before I attempted to get into the Army Air Corps to be a pilot. So I wrote a letter asking for information. And the first letter of rejection that I received said in no uncertain terms, there were no facilities to train Negroes to fly in any branch of the American military service. That kicked me off because I thought anybody could get into the service very easily. And then I heard that the United States was going to start a program to train Negroes to fly. And I applied the second time. That letter of rejection was a form letter sent to anyone who did not qualify. And it said, well, that's what opened my eyes to not having done my homework before I wrote these letters. But this second letter of rejection was a form letter sent to anyone who did not qualify. That letter said basically, for anyone to get into a flying training program in the American military system, they must have completed a minimum of 2 years of college.
General, that was a clip from a retired Lieutenant Colonel Hiram Mann, who was one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. And one of the final things he said when he left us that day was, I asked him, what's your advice for young people thinking about going to the military? He said, get as much education as you can. He's quite an inspiration, and in his 90s, I think he could still fly that aircraft.
I would not bet against the colonel, and I've had the pleasure of meeting Colonel Mann, and he truly is an extraordinary person, and with his history, he's a real national treasure. Listening to him and his voice when he says, my country, really tells you that he set out to serve this country in our Army Air Corps with the purest of intentions. And as I look at the all the young men and women who serve today in the Army, we have the Army values, and the one that means the most to me is selfless service, and that is putting the needs of the nation ahead of your own. And I think that's true today, just as it was back in Colonel Mann's day.
Truly an inspiration. General, joining us now is Lieutenant Colonel Brian Bobo from Fort McCoy. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Morning, Brian.
Morning, sir.
Colonel, how many troops have you got over in Fort McCoy, and how long before they'll all be there?
Well, right now we're wrapping up. I'm actually at Camp Ripley now, wrapping up our training. We're the last unit to go down to Fort McCoy with the brigade. And so right now I just have a few down there getting ready for us to move down there and receive us. But I will shortly have over about 100 troops down there.
Out of the total 2,400 that'll be deploying to Kuwait and Iraq?
Yes, we have one of the smaller elements.
Colonel, I'm a civilian now. It's been a long time since I've been in the military, since Vietnam. Can you tell me a little bit, how big a job is it to pick up 2,400 soldiers and all their gear and move them halfway around the world and then perform a mission?
It's a tough job. I think in a lot of ways the move over and the move back are some of the most challenging aspects of the deployment, just trying to figure out between the troops and the equipment and what equipment you need and what equipment is already there, and trying to analyze all that and figure out what you actually need. And then some of the missions we're doing right now are not missions that we normally do, and we don't train to do these kind of missions. They're not what the Army, doctrinally, as we say, does. And so it's a real challenge to figure out, how do you accomplish that mission? Who's the right person to put in there? What's the right personality even? And so we've been working through that, and it's been a good challenge for us.
Say, Colonel, would you tell us a little bit about what some of those non-standard missions that your troopers are preparing to do, other than their normal support mission? What kinds of things will your soldiers be doing over in Kuwait and Iraq?
Well, for my battalion, we normally train to support the brigade in the field, supporting tanks and artillery, which is very logistically heavy type of support mission. What we'll actually be doing in Kuwait is we'll be running two camp command cells, and so we'll be running camps that support the withdrawal from Iraq, making sure that the troops that come there have a safe place to stay for, in terms of force protection and security, making sure that they have good, clean, safe building to live in, that they're fed, they have all the support they need to turn their equipment in and do the things they need to do to prepare to redeploy back to the States.
Now, Colonel, I understand you've had some advance teams go over and take a look at the base where you'll be stationed, and you're taking over for another unit that's withdrawing?
Yes, we'll be replacing a unit that's there now, and the biggest challenge for my battalion is that my battalion will actually be replacing two battalions in theater, and so we've had to try to figure out how do we take our staff and the soldiers we have and split them in a way that we have the right people in the right camps doing the right things so we can replicate those two command cells.
Now, I understand also that they're leaving behind some equipment, and so that you don't have to take all of your equipment, but you have to take some.
Yes, and there's quite a bit of equipment that's in theater right now, and so for the most part, we don't have to take much of our own, just some key pieces of equipment that we feel we need to complete our mission.
Say, Brian, General Nash mentioned the overall experience level of the brigade, about one-third. This is their second or later deployment, about two-thirds. This will be their first. What's the level of experience within your battalion?
When I look at my staff, I think all but one have deployed at least once in the past, if not on their third deployment. When I look at everybody that I'm taking, roughly half to three-quarters have deployed before at least once.
So you got a good experienced crew going with you.
Very experienced.
And Colonel, I understand that these 2,400 troops come from all over the state.
Yes, they do. We have troops from every reaches of Minnesota and some from other states as well that come and are part of the Minnesota Guard.
Yeah, they and their families have all been through some training so that the families know that if they have any needs or have anything they need help with, they can go to the family readiness groups and the family assistance centers and that the support is here back in Minnesota to help take care of the families.
Yes, we're very privileged from that standpoint. From the kind of the first line of support, the way I look at it is our family readiness groups. You know, we just have some phenomenal volunteers that really give a lot of their personal time and effort to make sure that our troops are supported. And then the state with the Yellow Ribbon program and the family assistance centers and just all the types of support we're getting has just been phenomenal. Even a lot of our employers, I work for Target, in my normal civilian job, and they have just, I've been overwhelmed by the support the Target's given me. Churches, just the community as a whole really seems to be coming together and really, really helping us out.
Just a few seconds left, sir. It's got to make your soldiers feel good that there's that level of support back in Minnesota for them.
Yes, it makes all the difference. Knowing that your employer supports you, knowing that your community is supporting you, knowing that your family is supporting you, it makes a huge difference on a deployment like this from a morale standpoint and just from my own personal standpoint, knowing that that my soldiers are supported makes me feel really good.
Colonel Bobel, thanks for joining us today. We'll be right back with Governor Mark Dayton after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. There's some music from the 34th Infantry Division Red Bull Band. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and my co-host this morning has been retired General, Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. In this segment, joining us today is the governor of the state of Minnesota and the commander-in-chief of the Minnesota National Guard, the Honorable Mark Dayton. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, General.
Good morning, Governor.
Governor, are you expecting a busy day today?
I'm going to the service at Fort Snelling at 10 o'clock this morning, and last Sunday I went to the going away ceremony for some of the heroes of the Red Bulls who are going over to Kuwait and Iraq, and the heavens opened up and just poured rain down on all of us for a shortened ceremony. The only virtue was the four shortest political speeches you ever heard in your life.
Governor, I was at that event and went pretty well until we did the flag ceremony from the reenactors to the 34th Infantry Division, but then I felt kind of sorry for my governor and my adjutant general and all the troops because it really did pour.
Yeah, and I felt sorry for those people in the old Civil War uniforms because those must have been sort of, you know, really heavy when they got soaked.
Governor, on this Memorial Day 2011, is there anyone special that you think about?
You know, I think about the brave Minnesotans whose funerals I've attended in the last decade from being in the Senate and governor, and, you know, just their families and especially their little children. And, you know, you just realize that the price, the supreme price that some heroes pay for our freedom and our way of life, and just enormous gratitude to them.
Governor, any suggestions for how Minnesotans listening today would honor those who served or who have served in the military?
Well, certainly anyone who has lost a loved one or a friend, you know, visit their gravesite if it's available, and or else pause and think of them and give gratitude. And anyone who's in proximate to a family whose father or mother is serving overseas, you know, lending a helping hand, bringing a hot dish, anything that shows them that we appreciate the sacrifice they as families are making as well as their loved ones.
Governor, in the state of Minnesota, we've got a program, as you know, called the BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org program, and you were instrumental in helping get that up and started, and now as Commander-in-Chief, as you know, there's 2,400 members of the 34th Infantry Division leaving. That's quite a program that you helped the former Adjutant General and his staff put in place.
Well, the Minnesota National Guard and former General Shelato, now Commissioner Shelato, really deserve the credit. They thought it up, and I was able to help get the first congressional funding for it, and now it's expanded to a nationwide program. And, yes, I feel very committed to it, and I look forward to working with both General Nash and Commissioner Shelato to expand it and get more communities involved and reach out to every family, especially, as you say, with this next year of some 2,400 men and women being deployed.
Well, Governor, I want to thank you for your presence at many of these events as the Commander-in-Chief, whether you have to stand in the rain or not. It truly signals to our soldiers, as a guy who stood in those ranks for many years, the importance of their service and your appreciation for everything that they and their families are giving up.
Well, thank you. It's my honor to be there. And there, as you know, sad moments. They're hard to see the faces of the families especially. But I like the welcome home ceremonies much better. But they each have their place, and I just pray that they all come back.
Governor, this is Tom again. It seems to me that we've seen you as Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard spend a lot of time with them on the state mission, which includes emergencies and floods and so forth. You've been around quite a while. Did you have any idea how much time you'd be spending with the Minnesota National Guard once you became governor?
No, I'm just glad we spent most of the time in flood preparations and not as much time as we feared on actual flood control and the like. But just yesterday, I got a call from our Director of Emergency Services, Chris Idy, and approved an order that we'll have our guard on Tuesday deliver these giant sandbags, I forget the name, up to North Dakota, where they're still having flooding there because the snow's coming out of the mountains in Montana and flooding the Missouri River and its tributaries. So, you know, the guard's always on call, and they always respond. And General Nash, who's now the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, he went to every single one of those planning meetings and he could have delegated it. I encouraged him to do so. He said, no, I'm going to every one of them, and he did. And it was so reassuring to the local people that and officials that, you know, here was the commander of the Minnesota National Guard, the adjutant general there himself, to offer the assurances that the Guard would be there when called upon, which it always is. And that's a great tribute to all the incredibly wonderful men and women who devote their lives and to the service of their state and their country.
Governor, it doesn't hit the news very often. I suppose it's not newsworthy, but you spend a great deal of time with preparations for things like flood control and disasters and so forth with the National Guard. And I wish it would get more coverage, because you spend a lot of time on those preventative measures, don't you?
Well, we did this year because we expected a much more severe flooding. That's what was predicted, and we dodged a bullet, fortunately. So no complaints about that part of it, but you know, it's part of the job, and I'm honored to have the chance to serve Minnesotans. And, you know, again, today we remember those who served much more heroically and paid the ultimate price, having stood on the beach of Normandy twice, once by myself, and then I took my sons because I wanted them to have the experience of standing on that shore and looking into those German bunkers and trying to imagine just the hellfire that the brave men faced coming off those boats. And then you go to this American cemetery just nearby, and the power of this profound silence and over 10,000 crosses all lined up in rows, you realize, as I say, that freedom is not free, and that for some it's the ultimate sacrifice for the rest of us, and it's a very humbling experience.
Governor, as we think about the 34th Infantry Division deploying another 2,400 troops, we've had some of them on the show, and I understand they come from 530 communities, almost every county from the state of Minnesota. And, of course, we're working as hard as we can to develop yellow ribbon cities where all those armories are so that we can support the troops. But for you, it's got to be serious and interesting to participate in that deployment and to see how all that's coming together.
I'm so admiring of those who are willing to serve, and the number of them that are going for the fourth, fifth, sixth, and even seventh times deployed in this last decade is just astonishing. And they have one stint was extended and then extended again from 12 months to 22 months, which is the longest stint in deployment of any unit anywhere in the active or reserve or the Guard in the United States. And so, you know, they went through that and still are coming back to serve their country again. I'm in awe of their patriotism and their courage. Having been to Iraq in 115 degrees all day long, and Afghanistan about the same, you know, I just am in awe of their dedication and their fitness, too.
Well, Governor, during my time overseas, I watched my fellow soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines operate, I came to a theory that said that in order to continue to do the hard work we do over there, we need to believe that what we're doing is important. We need to feel that we're supported and appreciated by the people back home, and we need to know that our families are being taken care of. And certainly the efforts of the Minnesota reintegration program and organizations like the Minnesota Military Family Foundation go a long way to doing that. And again, I just want to say thank you for your support of the organization, because that knowing that people back home appreciate what they're putting forth and what they're sacrificing goes a long way to motivating them and keeping them focused on their task as they go out and do their daily work overseas.
Well, I've heard that too, sir. You know, so much from the you know, men and women themselves, that if they have, you know, their families are being taken care of, it frees their mind to do the perilous duty that they're engaged in Iraq or Afghanistan, and you know, we just can't do enough for those families, because they're making a sacrifice just as great, in some ways emotionally even greater than their loved ones, because they don't know moment to moment whether they're safe or in harm's way, and they're coping with all the responsibilities of being a mother or a father without a spouse, and or a kid without a mother or father. And so, you know, we can't do enough to support them and thank them and help them through this challenging time.
Governor, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners on this Memorial Day 2011?
Just this is the 145th anniversary of the first Memorial Day. It was called Decoration Day in 1866, which would have been right in the aftermath of the Civil War. So, you know, again, having been in Washington on 9/11 and having stood at the Capitol, which was the site of the fourth plane that was heroically brought down by the passengers and spared the U.S. Capitol, I just... you know, again, those who protect our country and keep us safe and keep our freedom and our way of life protected, I just have my ultimate respect and admiration. And those who paid the ultimate price and their families deserve our gratitude, especially on Memorial Day.
Governor, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us on this Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
My honor to be with you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Governor.
We'll be right back after a short break. This is the special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Newstalk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to this special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'd like to thank my co-host for today, retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. General, you've done a great job this morning, and I know you've got some thoughts for our listeners on Memorial Day as we complete our final segment. I don't know where the 3 hours went.
Well, they went by fast, Tom, and thank you for the opportunity for me to join you this morning. As I said at the onset, Memorial Day is a very special day for me. I have a lot of childhood memories, my sisters as Girl Scouts laying poppies as they formed a Flanders Field, a replica of Flanders Field, as our neighbor across the alley read the roll call of fallen soldiers from my hometown. But my tour in Iraq kind of took that from being this historical thing that a young kid hears about and learns about to being something very personal. And you asked, I've asked several of our guests today about, you know, who do you think about on Memorial Day? And first I think of the 23 soldiers that I serve with in Iraq that didn't come home, that we had memorial services for overseas. And then specifically, I think of James Wordish, Specialist James Wordish of the 34th Infantry Division, who, along with Daniel Drevnik and Carlos Wilcox, were killed on the 16th of July, 2009, in a rocket attack in Basra. Not only is James from my hometown of Olivia, but he also is the son of one of my classmates from high school. And it's just a reminder again of the costs that sometimes Americans are asked to give for their country. But as we said at the beginning, this is not a national day of mourning, but a day to honor, remember, respect, and appreciate those who have given their lives in service to this nation. Douglas MacArthur said once, "Don't mourn that they died. Celebrate that men and women like them lived," and certainly today I celebrate that that a young man like James Wordish lived.
Thank you, General, and we'd like to remind the listeners that at 3 o'clock today, Congress has set that aside for a special minute of remembrance. And as host of this program and as a Vietnam veteran, I'd like to ask everyone listening to sometime today, if not at 3 o'clock, shut off all your equipment, shut off your telephone, shut down the TVs, stop and think for a moment. We live, we have the privilege to live in the greatest country in the history of the face of the earth. We have the opportunity. Look at the news every day. We argue with each other. We discuss with each other. We have freedom of religion. We have freedom of speech. We have these things because so many Americans have given their lives. Over the years, the number varies. About 1,350,000 Americans have died in wars going back from the Revolutionary War up to the current wars. And if not for our people that were willing to step up and do the things that we heard today, the Holocaust is evil. All that evil needs to flourish is for good men to do nothing. I can't imagine that America would be the country that it is today if we didn't have people that would step up and fight for the rights, that the freedoms that we have in this country that we take for granted. People all over the world look at America and they wish they had the right to do these things. We have an open society, and we have great people that step up and do things. And the questions come up for every guest today. What do you think about Memorial Day? And I think on Memorial Day about my family. My grandfather came here 99 years ago from Ireland. My father served in the Pacific and the Marine Corps in World War II. His brother died as a waste gunner of a the Army Air Corps over Austria in World War II. My older brother served two tours in Vietnam and United States Marine Corps, and it eventually killed him. I served in Vietnam, and my son served in the United States Navy. For me, this is personal. I believe in this country. I believe in what we do. I believe in the right to chase the American dream, but I also believe in our heroes, and my heroes today are the 2,400 guardsmen that are on their way to Fort McCoy to serve our country and serve our state. And I would ask you all to keep them in your thoughts and prayers and do whatever you can to help their families while they're deployed. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank you for listening to the special Memorial Day edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant Colonel Bobo for the 1st Brigade Combat Team, the Fort Snelling Memorial Rifle Squad, Governor Mark Dayton, our Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard, Secretary of State Ritchie, Commissioner Larry Shelladeau, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash, Captain Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Dutch Cragen, Scott Lear from Burl Oaks Golf Club, Chief Campos from the Washington County Yellow Ribbon Program, and I'd like to invite you to join us next Sunday and every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Next Sunday, we talk to Trent Reedy, a local soldier-turned-author about his new book, Dust in the Wind, and Captain Doug Bly. And we'll be back with more about the Patriot Guard and their missions. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. If you have questions for our mailbag or want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, along with Brigadier General Joe Kelly, and we hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week. And we'd like to leave you one more time with a message from one of our Minnesota National Guard chaplains, Captain Vince Hokanen.
Well, the passage that I wanted to read to you today on this Memorial Day is Proverbs 27, verse 12. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. And as our soldiers are preparing for battle, even in today's conflict, they prepare at length for mobilization, and they go to their training and prepare to engage the enemy that they're going to be facing in the operations. And any prudent person would want to prepare for any kind of battle. We often prepare our finances for our houses, and we borrow money for our cars, and we want to foresee those things that we might be facing in the future. And our country has always been the kind of country that foresees things, and our soldiers have always prepared for battle. And today we want to honor and memorialize those that have given their lives, who have prepared our nation for the prosperity that we see and that we experience today. And we want to honor those that have given their lives and the families that have sacrificed so much for the course of freedom and fighting for our justice. And we thank God for these things that he's given to us. And I wanted to offer a prayer on this Memorial Day. Heavenly Father, as we consider this Memorial Day, we want to recognize those soldiers and families that have gone before us and have given their lives in defense of our great nation. We honor their memory and sacrifice and thank you for their dedication and commitment to all Americans. We ask for strength for each day those who are serving abroad and for their families to help them endure the rigors of separation. Help us who are in the military here back home to do all we can to support our military families. We think of the millions of veterans out there who have fought in past wars and who have served their country faithfully, and ask you to bless them with health and prosper their futures. Help all of us to never forget the sacrifices our fighting men and women have paid on our behalf. Help us sense your presence each and every day as we continue to enjoy the freedoms our veterans have bought for us with their sacrifices and even their lives. God bless America. In your name I pray.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.